Hey, it's Zach, and I wanted to tell you about our newest podcast, Swagoo and Perk. Oh, boy. Led by its namesake host, former NFL veteran and analyst Marcus Spears. He's Swagoo, obviously. An NBA champion and analyst, Kendrick Perkins, who yells at me all the time. With new episodes every Tuesday morning, Swagoo and Perk will bring listeners the latest NBA and NFL news, as well as look inside their lives with can't-miss conversations. That's Swagoo and Perk. I'm going to tell you, editorially, you will not stop laughing throughout the whole episode. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast, live on a beautiful autumn Monday morning on the East Coast, where it's time to talk about rookies. We're about 2+ weeks into the NBA season. This rookie class has been a lot of fun. And to help us discuss and dissect how they are playing, the guy who knows them better than anyone before they come into the league and is watching them progress like, you know, like students in his class almost, Mr. Mike Schmitz, how are you?
I'm good, Zach. I'm proud of my pupils so far this year. They're living up to expectations.
Well, I'll tell you right now, the guy we're going to start with, this is a bad day for anyone who doesn't want me to be irrationally exuberant about Evan Mobley. So this is a bad day because last night against the Knicks, Evan Mobley just had me giggling the entire game. 11 of 15 from the floor, 2 of 4 from 3. He's averaging 15, 8, and 2.5 assists per game this season on 52% shooting, only 4 of 17 from threes, 56% on twos. He's like number one or two or three in basically every advanced stat there is for rookies, number two in points per game. And let me tell you this, Mike. The thing that got me most excited last night, of all the Evan Mobley highlights, the defense is just outrageous for a rookie. Down the stretch, Knicks trying to claw their way back into it. Jared Allen and Mobley are on the floor in this 4-5 thing that everyone's like, going to work? Is there going to be enough spacing? Back-to-back possessions. Evan Mobley sets a screen for Garland. Short roll. Catches the ball at the foul line. First one. Looks at Jared Allen for the high-low. Fools the whole defense. No-look pass to Garland. I guess it must have been somebody else handling the ball up top. No-look pass to Garland in the corner for a three. Next possession. Same play. Same scheme. Doesn't throw the pass to the corner. Instead, one dribble, draws the defense, bounce past Jared Allen, dunk. Oh, baby. Is this even better than advertised? Like, so you watched him coming into the league. What's different than you expected already at this stage?
It's really the scoring that's surprised me the most. We knew he could do everything else, okay? He can switch pick and roll. He protects the rim. He can handle. He can pass. Like, we compared him to a young Anthony Davis and a young Chris Bosh for a reason, but I didn't expect him to go into Madison Square Garden and score 26 points. I didn't expect him to go into Staples Center, kind of a homecoming, and score 23 points against Anthony Davis and the Lakers. I think the thought with Evan was always, he's a blender. He's a connector. He moves the ball. He does all the little things. Like, maybe he's your second or third option when he's at his best, right? But he's their number. I mean, he's arguably their best player. And the fact that he can go get you 26 points.
This is too much, Mike. It's too much for me this morning. It's too much. He's their best player. I need you to talk me down because it's just too much. It's too much.
Well, here's the thing. I'm usually Mr. Okay, let's not do a redraft after 5 minutes, right? Let's wait, you know, a year, two years.
I'm already ready to do it. I'm already. Keep going. I'm already.
But this seems a little bit different. And, you know, I was able to watch Evan since he was – I mean, I live in L.A. I live in California. He played high school ball not too far from here. I was at pretty much every USC home game. And I'm kind of shooting myself in the foot, like – Why didn't we talk about him as like the unquestioned number one? Now, okay, I'm still a Cade Cunningham diehard. I think he's going to figure it out. I think he's going to be just fine. And I think he's going to be a stud in his own right. But there were questions about Evan's aggressiveness. You know, I was at a game when he took zero shots, I believe, against Utah. But it's a different game.
Did the Cavs pay him off to take zero? I guess it was probably the draft order was not set, obviously, by them. But I'm like, how could he take zero shots where teams – oh.
There's no space. Okay, first of all, there's no space in college. Everybody's doubling him. And Evan's, like, so unselfish and such a nice person that he wants to make the right play. He wants to win. He wants to make everyone around him better. And so you didn't always see this, like, aggressive – dominant type of personality. And then you sit down with him He's like the nicest kid on the planet. Like, you wonder if he was too nice. And, you know, I did a film session sit down with him like a week or so ago when he was out here in LA. And he hasn't changed at all since I first interviewed him in 2018. He's just this like pleasant, happy-go-lucky guy who's, you know, doesn't really have a lot of like aggression in his voice. So his skeptics would say, you know, is he an alpha? And everybody doesn't need to be Isaiah Stewart, right? And ground and pound and run through a brick wall. He's skilled enough to get by, more than get by, you know, with his length and his feel and his touch. And yeah, man, he's been incredible. The Cavs got one. They got a franchise building block. He looks like a borderline all-star right now. So I think you're right to be giddy. And I'm excited about what he can be even in the future, because the whole thing with Evan was, okay, what is he going to be in 3-4 years? Not like, is he going to be this right now? So he's way ahead of schedule.
They're running regular 4-5 pick and rolls with Mobley as the ball handler. And last night against the Knicks, one of them got a switch. So Mitchell Robinson switched onto him. And later in the possession, he got the ball at the 3-point arc on the right wing against Mitchell Robinson and roasted him so badly off the dribble that it was like, oh my God, he can do this to centers, or and just dunked on the entire Knicks team. And look, defensively, he's absolutely as advertised. Like, he can do everything defensively. And the tell for that is, like, when guards get him on a switch, you could – and these are, like, good guards. Mm-hmm. Good guards. Like, all right, I got Evan Mobley on a switch. You know what? Where's Jared Allen's guy? Let me bring him up to set a screen because I don't like this one in front of me. This one's trouble. Give me a bigger, slower guy because I can't do anything with this guy. Look, he's playing some power forward and some center. And when he plays center, he becomes this dynamic lob threat that he can't really be when he's a four. But as soon as they shift him to center, they're running, you know, empty side pick and rolls for him where he can catch lobs, and his passing gets even more dangerous. The question I have, it's not even a question, but, you know, down the line, can he post up switches is something I'm going to be watching every game. I know it's early. The Cavs are playing with – this is all just free money for the Cavs. I mean, there's no stakes for them this year really at this point. So it doesn't – and he's so young, it doesn't matter. But that's the thing that's going to be interesting to me, because he can't really back people down. He can dribble. He's got a little touch. That's something – is it too early for me to be watching for that? Maybe it's too early.
No, I mean, it's been a question for him, you know, I think most of his career. I mean, I was at the Clipper game and they switched everything like they usually do. And Reggie Jackson was pushing him out like beyond the 3-point line, you know, and it was, and I asked him about that. I was like, okay, is this the next evolution of your game? Like, what should you guys do in these situations? And he gave me a very smart answer. He's like, listen, let's not just try to like pound the ball into me. He's like, that's not my game. Move it to the other side and let's play offense, you know? And so he knows he's not this like imposing physical back you down type of force, but I still think that is a question. Like, if you switch him, you can move him off his spots and how can he go get you a bucket? But everything else is unbelievable, man. Like,
I'm just bringing that up to temper my
giggly.
I'm like a giggly schoolgirl about Evan Mobley. I'm like at a Beatles concert in 1964. I'm so excited. I can't help myself. And I will say this. You mentioned redrafting and how it's too early to have the redrafting conversation. You're all in on Cade. And Cade, you know, I was talking to a front office guy last week about Cade and about a lot of other things. And he said, you know, one of the things that was interesting about Cade Cunningham is that when you talked to his cohort in the draft, they would all say, this guy just has it. Like, whatever it is that makes other people better, that people want to play with him, that drives winning, like, he was the guy they all looked up to in that sense. It's like almost like a level above them. But I will say this, and I'll just leave it here for now. I don't think the noise before the draft about Detroit not being 100% sure they were taking Cade Cunningham, I don't think that was BS. I don't think it was a smokescreen. And I think the other name was Evan Mobley. That's what I will say.
Yeah, and it was tough to evaluate because this draft really, at least at the time, we viewed it as having three number one type of picks, you know, and Jalen Green obviously hasn't quite lived up to that yet. I think he's probably a little bit more long-term, clearly, than even Evan. But, you know, Cade, didn't have this like amazing pre-draft process. He was a little bit dinged up even during summer league, you know, and he's always been like a slow burn. You know, he's not somebody where you just roll out the balls like, okay, Evan Mobley, you see him handling the ball, running around, you know, blocking shots, switching, shooting threes, like that pops, you know, like right away you say, oh, that's a guy. Jalen Green, you see him like dunking on the way up and making step back threes over Anthony Davis. And you're like, oh, okay, that's what they look like. With Cade, you're not blown away by the explosiveness. You're not blown away by, you know, his like ball handling or this flashy style. It's more like he's going to lull you to sleep. He's going to wait until the moment is greatest, and then he's going to rise to the occasion. And then you're going to look down. He's got 25, 5, and 5, and they're going to win. And so that's why I think we need to be a little bit patient with Cade.
You know, I shouldn't write him off after 4 games. I shouldn't do that.
Isn't that crazy? How you shouldn't? I mean, people want to like he's a bust. Like, come on.
No, that's not a real thing, is it?
I mean, I don't know. I got to stop reading the internet. This is what my thing is. I mute a lot of people, and I think I need to just keep hitting the mute button and stay off the interwebs because, I mean, come on. He's coming off of an ankle. He's missing open shots. But when he's on the court, like the ball is moving. You can tell that he's already making them a better basketball team, and those shots are going to start falling, and I think he's going to look like the number one pick sooner than later.
That's interesting. All right, so let's just talk. I'm done with Mobley. Let's talk about Cade Cunningham, who has played 4 games. Mm-hmm. Four games. 11 points a game, 6 rebounds, 3 assists. The shooting numbers may hurt your ears, but I'm going to say them anyway. 23% from the floor, 14% on threes, which is 4 of 28, and 32% on twos. Needless to say, Mike, that's bad. Mm-hmm. And he is last or close to last in every advanced stat that there is. It's funny. There's a bucket of rookies, and there's this species of rookies every year that people have a hard time evaluating in both ways. They put up big raw numbers, horrible efficiency numbers because they have big roles on bad teams. And that bucket this year is Cade Cunningham so far, 4 games again. Jalen Suggs and Jalen Green are all like at the bottom of all the advanced stats. They're all going to average like 15 a game because their teams are horrible and they get to do whatever they want. Cade is not getting to the basket much. He's not getting to the foul line much. He's getting to the foul line a little bit. He looks sometimes a little tentative when he drives on the pick and roll. Like he'll pull it up one dribble early. But again, he's just starting. You can see the combination of size and vision. Like he can make the passes. He knows the reads. He looks comfortable with the ball. Like I'm just still in the curiosity phase, obviously. What have you, it's only been 4 games and he was really, the first two were a little discouraging. The next two, although he hasn't shot it that well, 10 of 34 in his last 2 games, but 35 total points have been a little more encouraging. Have you seen anything notable yet, either positive or negative?
Yeah, like I said, I think a lot of his shots just aren't falling. Like it's even like swing, wide open threes that he regularly knocks down, or little touch shots, you know, around the rim that aren't falling. I mean, I was encouraged by the fact that, you know, you saw the way he moved Kevin Durant and just got right to the rim and finished. You saw the way he used his body to dislodge James Harden, who's, yeah, like, okay, not the world's greatest defender, but he's strong.
It's hard to dislodge. Big guys can't dislodge him.
Right. So that shows you a little bit of his strength, right? That he can get where he needs to go on a spaced NBA floor. So when the shots start falling, when those little floaters and touch shots start falling, I think you're going to see a much different player. And I like the way, like, listen, they're not great. Okay. Like that's putting it lightly. They have a lot of areas to improve, but you can tell the ball is moving a lot more. I think when they put it in his hands, it's not as stagnant. It's not as just ISO basketball. Like they're playing a better brand of basketball. So I think as they continue to surround him with shooting, he's going to become even more dynamic. So yeah, it's ugly right now. But again, we need to be patient with him because even last year, like he's the type of guy who you looked at his first half stats against his second half stats, he would go 1 for 6 in the first half with 2 points and 2 assists and just kind of feel out the game and be, all right, where can I attack? Where are their weak points? Who do I need to spoon feed? How do I feel this out? And then in the second half, it's like 20 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds, game winner. Like he has that clutch gene. If you look at his numbers in the last like 2 minutes of every game, he was one of the best players in the country. So I think that's where we need to be patient, because he is kind of a feel things out type of guy.
I did think it was just a little bit funny. Just a little bit. I watched, I think, three of his four games start to finish. I watched his first game, very excited, as was everybody. I did think it was just a little funny how the Detroit media went so overboard being like, yeah, he only had 2 points and two assists on one of eight shooting. But if you guys watch the game, the way he impacts the game, he found other ways to impact the game. The couple of deflections, threw some nice extra passes. I mean, just forget the numbers for a second. The guy impacts winning. And it's like, you can just say he had an underwhelming debut. Like, it's okay. Like, you can just say, you don't have to, like, fake build it up. I think he'll be fine. I do think the who should be the number one pick in this draft will be an interesting conversation for, like, 15 years. Mm-hmm. But to your point about the passing, I'm a sucker for passing plus height. And there was this one play, I can't remember which game it was, where Olynyk had a mismatch in the post and went to the block, and the other team fronted him. Mm-hmm. And the weak side corner defender like crept in a little bit to just help on the lob, right? Cade had the ball and immediately, no hesitation. Like sometimes guys need someone to flash to the foul line for a high low. He just whipped the ball to that corner shooter who probably missed. I don't remember. It's the Pistons. But it was this pass. It was just instant, accurate. Like I'm 6'6". I don't need any middleman to do this. Boom. And I will say, I mean, God only knows which of these players will be on the Pistons when they're good again. I like the theory of Killian Hayes, Cade Cunningham, Sadiq Bey, 1-2-3, because they're all kind of big. They can all like handle and pass. And Sadiq Bey, he's had a nice second season, and he's mean. Like he is driving into dudes with force and like knocking them backwards with a mean streak that I really like. And again, they're just a theoretical team at this point. I think Killian Hayes is frankly should be as much source of anxiety as Cade Cunningham is after four games, if not more. But I can see the theory. What it translates to, I don't know.
Well, and here's what I'll say about Cade, too. Just in terms of, like, circling back to how his peers view him, like, there's a reason why. On the USA U19 team, Jalen Green was on that team. Evan Mobley, he was a little dinged up. He was on that team. Tyrese Halliburton was on that team. And Cade was by far the best player on the court almost every single game. And then you look at his teammate at Montverde, Scotty Barnes, who I love. I'm sure
he's next, Toronto fans. Don't worry.
I love Scotty Barnes, but he was the best player on maybe the best high school team that we've ever seen. Like Cade has always been the best player. And he's always like, I think he's going to be a triple double guy in the NBA. Like I really do.
I love it.
So don't sell your Cade Cunningham stock, please, please, please. I'm begging you. Evan Mobley is a stud. I'm with that 100%. But Cade, as those jumbo playmakers, they're hard to find. And I think he has all the ingredients to be a star, just kind of a slow burn because he's so skill based.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes! Catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's there up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, watch out for them. You name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training, just in time for summer and warmer days. It's also the best time of the year to take a new look at your fitness routine, dial it up a notch, and continue powering on. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your personalized training in mind. Whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance, Peloton classes help you focus on your needs and goals. They are also made to challenge you with a variety of classes like boot camps, boxing, okay, full body strength, marathon training, all created to grow your skills or push you to improve in what you already excel in. Peloton's expert coaches and nonstop vibes, #vibes, will push you to new levels of strength and endurance, keeping you on your toes while giving you the professional coaching you need. And with a wide variety of options, whether you prefer to run outdoors, row, or ride at home, or strength train at the gym,
Peloton has something for you. Get your head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com. That's onepeloton.com.
Quinn Snyder once used an expression to me in an interview about a player. I don't even remember which player, but it was about a player who had a nice blend of patience and feel for a young guy. And he said, "I like his basketball nervous system." I always liked that quote. And that quote to me applies hugely to Scottie Barnes, who I want to go with next, but also applies to Cade Cunningham. He doesn't seem affected by missing shots. He doesn't seem affected by the pace of the game around him or what's going on around him. He just has a nice, calm confidence and feel that I think will serve him well. Let's get to Scottie Barnes, because, oh my God, Scottie Barnes. 16.5 points a game, that's number one among rookies. 8.7 rebounds, 2.5 assists on 52% shooting, just 20% on threes. He's 2 of 10 on threes, 55% overall. He's number three, number two, number one in almost every advanced stat there is. Rookie of the year right now is Scottie Barnes or Evan Mobley. I would vote for Evan Mobley, but if you would like to vote for Scottie Barnes, that is fine. He can guard every position. He defended James Harden okay last night against Brooklyn. By the way, I don't know if you saw that game, Mike. That was the most Harden has looked. He had some burst and explosion back. He blew by some guys. He was drawing two and three defenders regularly. Like, that was a very positive step for James Harden against a defense that is just frankly annoying as hell to play against. And Scottie Barnes is part of that. He can grab and go off of rebounds. And like the nervous system thing, it comes to mind because everyone knows the jumper is a question mark. So when he has the ball, people go under picks against him. And he just doesn't care. He just like kind of keeps going like, "Ah, maybe I'll use another screen. I'm surveying the floor. Okay, that guy's over there. That guy's leaning this way. Oh, you went under again because you don't respect me. That's fine. I'm kind of getting my way down. Boom, pass, backdoor cutter, pass. You guy," and he's directing cutters. Like, "You cut this way and that shooter will be open. Pass." Just a good nervous system. Has his, like 16.5, that has to be a surprise that he's scoring that much, right? Like what about how he's getting that has stood out to you?
It's 100% a surprise. And I was the biggest Scottie Barnes fan that you'll find. Like, I've been fortunate enough to be around him since he's 15. He's one of my favorite prospects I've ever spent time with. Like, his joy for the game, his joy for people. And I call him the people's champ because everybody loves Scottie Barnes. Everyone in the world. Everyone who's coached him, everyone who's played with him, played against him. Scottie's my guy. That's what you hear. But the question with Scottie has always been scoring. Like, because, and not just, okay, can he score, but also like, is he willing to score? Is he aggressive enough to score? And so I think he's benefited from obviously the spacing on an NBA floor, the way that they're playing in small and really kind of just telling him, like, "We want you to be aggressive." I mean, you've heard Nick Nurse, even in press conferences, being like, "Okay, that's not aggressive enough. Like, we need more from Scottie. We want him to take even more shots because it's in his nature to be a giver." And that's why I almost thought, okay, he's going to be this like much rangier, longer Draymond Green type of like, he can really pass. He's going to get everyone involved. He can really defend. He can play all five positions, but I'm not sure he's ever going to be wired to score. And so I'll tell you kind of a funny story about that, even in the pre-draft process. So I went up to Santa Barbara to watch him where he was working out and, you know, very regimented in his approach, 8 a.m. He was on it every single day. And the guy he was training with who's now an assistant coach at Louisville, Ross McMaines, total stud. And so he's telling me this drill that they have. It's called, I want to say 25 perfect is the name for it, something along those lines. And he would have every single player visualize for like 30 seconds. Okay. Visualize yourself scoring 25 points, right? And then go out on the court. And we're going to have, you know, people helping and you can pass the ball to and stuff, and then get to each spot and score those 25 points against like dummy defense. Right. And so it's, you know, training your mind to score 25 points in a game. And he was telling me like, Scottie, it took him a while to even conceptualize scoring 25 points in an empty gym. He's like, "Wait a minute. Like, I need a little bit more time. Like, I got to figure out." And then he would ask, "But do assists count?" Like, but if I kick to the corner, like, and he makes a three, like,
are you trying to stoke my irrational affection for Scottie Barnes? He did not actually ask, do assists count? If I had overheard him asking, do assists count, I would be like, I'm drafting him now. Now. Yes. I'm drafting him right now.
It's a true story. That is Scottie Barnes 101. And so as endearing as that is on one hand, right? On the other hand, it's like, okay, he's so far in his mind from like being this aggressive scorer. That's just, it was never been in his nature. If you think about it, he played with Cade Cunningham and De'Ron Sharpe and Moses Moody. He was kind of like the connector on that.
You can't say Moses Moody on this podcast without also saying Mizi Modi, Muzi Madi, Madi Muses. Just as FYI, that's the rule.
Shout out Perk. I need one of those shirts. I didn't get the look on that one, but and then in college, he comes off the bench, and he's a guy who is just kind of a blender. Even before the Moody Moses, Modi Moses days in high school, he played with Vernon Carey, and he was kind of like a facilitator, defender on that team. So, yes, long answer short, or short answer long, I'm surprised that he's been scoring the ball this well, but I think that speaks to his aggressiveness, his mentality change, and then also like the mid-range game, the floaters, the physicality, the length. Like the mid-range is new for him.
And 45% so far on both floater range and long twos, 71% at the rim, and 40% of his shot attempts are coming at the rim for a Toronto team that is not like overflowing and spacing and shooting right now. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and he's not this like hyper fast guy, you know? He's not this like, okay, he needs a little bit of time to get moving, but those strides, like people used to call him slow and unathletic when he was young. Like that was, it's almost similar to things that they would say about Giannis. Like when Giannis was coming up, it was like, okay, is Giannis, because he was all arms and legs and he was all just this like loping, rangy guy who was growing into his body. Some people would say, is Giannis explosive enough? And you would hear that a little bit with Scottie Barnes as well. But when you get on an NBA floor with that much spacing and that much room, and he's kind of had this flip this switch of his mentality and then added the mid-range game and now perfected the floater and like a little bit of mid-post turnaround, I think you're starting to see, you know, the results of that. So, yeah, he's a complete stud. And some people you talk to in the league had him number one.
Whoa! You know,
yeah, like he was a polarizing guy. Some people say, oh, he's never going to score the ball. And then some of these kind of outside the box thinkers who are all about length and versatility were like, yeah, Scottie Barnes is my number one guy. So I'm very happy for his success. He's a lovely, lovely human being.
You know what's a commonality that a lot of these rookies I like have? And we're going to talk about Josh Giddey and Franz Wagner in this context. The Raptors use him as a screener in pick and roll a lot. And you only do that with guys who are non-centers, who you have faith can read the game and make plays when the floor is moving around. Like when you catch the ball after setting a screen, everything is going to be in flux. And if a team is putting you in that position as a rookie, that is a huge vote of confidence in both your finishing ability, but also your feel and your vision. And like this dude is just a basketball player. They put him in a bunch of situations. They'll put him in the post against a mismatch, not to score, but just to let him read the floor from there and make a pass out of it. It's just a basketball player. And another thing, a coach I was talking to last week, and this coach was talking about Josh Giddey, was very excited about Josh Giddey, not a Thunder coach, another team. Obviously, Josh Giddey's passing vision is A+ for a rookie. But he said the guy seems to like defense, and he had a couple vertical plays that this coach saw at the rim, just arms up. And again, like, he's not a center. He's not going to block shots. But just at 6'6", get your arms up, protect the rim if you're around. And this coach was like, man, I love wings who bring a little bit of that. I love it. It helps your defense so much. Scottie Barnes is going to have a whole lot of that on defense. And just really fun to watch. By the way, just while we're on the Raptors, you know who's number one among rookies in almost every advanced stat that there is?
Is it Delano Banton?
It is indeed Delano Banton. I don't know what that dude is. He's shooting. I like this. Sometimes when I'm trying to be happy about a player, I'll use the percentage, even though I know the raw number is very small. He's shooting 38% on threes, and everyone said he couldn't shoot. He's 3-for-8 on threes. It doesn't sound that impressive when you say 3-for-8. But this dude, I don't know what you can tell me in like a minute about the draft lead up to him, but he is gigantic at point guard, like gigantic. if he's guarding a pick and roll ball handler on defense and he goes over the screen and he has his arms out, there is no pass that dude can make. Like, that ball handler is in jail. The pocket pass isn't going to be there. The lob isn't going to be there. He's going to deflect the kickout pass. You're just, because he's just enormous. He pushes the pace like a madman. Nick Nurse was on it from the beginning. He was like, you guys are asking me about Goran Dragic not playing. Mm-hmm. You should be asking me about this Banton kid not playing. Give me the 30-second book on this guy coming into the league.
Yeah, kind of a windy path, to be honest. I first saw him at the BioSteel All-Canadian game in Toronto and was like, who is that kid? You know, he's got size and length, and he was almost playing like a playmaking wing point forward type. He's got some talent, but, you know, maybe some academic questions. We don't know about his eligibility, blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine. Ends up at Western Kentucky. So goes to Western Kentucky, averages three points a game. And you saw some of those moments, the flashes, but, you know, shot 21% from three, kind of still finding himself, you know, offensively. Then he transfers, goes to Nebraska, sits out. And then, you know, during his draft eligible season, they used him almost at point guard. And you saw some of those early flashes of, like, you know, near triple double games, facilitating, seeing over the top, making plays defensively with his length. But then as the season went on, started to struggle a little bit more, wasn't shooting the ball well, I think in the mid 20s again. And so with him, it was almost like the beauty's in the eye of the beholder, right? Like, here's this big wing who can do all these fun things. And if you like that versatility like the Raptors do, then they're like, okay, this guy's a diamond in the rough. And then other teams would say, well, no one's going to put the ball in his hands. And if the ball is in his hands, how is he going to make shots when he's off the ball? He can't shoot the ball, right? And so I think you got to give them a lot of credit for just kind of seeing how he would fit in their system and how you could use a guy like that and valuing his strengths as opposed to just killing his weaknesses. And so I think the fact that he's shooting the ball at a better clip on top of some of the playmaking.
38%, Mike. 38%. Just pretend it's high volume for me. 38%.
We'll take it. And he goes, okay, so here's his numbers. On his career, 160 attempts, 20%. 60% from the line, right? So this is dating back high school, college, all that. So if this is real on this very small sample, then I think you've got something. But
obviously, I'm going to bank on the 3 of 8. That's real. He's going to be a career 38% three-point shooter. Bank it. I'm in.
But he's good. I mean, he's a basketball player. And that's what I really appreciate what they're doing is they're like, listen, if you're 6'8 to 6'9 and you can play basketball, come on down. We'll turn you into something. And I think they got a guy.
They justifiably in Toronto have faith in, first of all, we're only drafting guys that we know are going to work. That's it. Mm-hmm. Like we're not, and not just work, but like A+ workers. You combine that desire with our coaching and whatever else we have, we think we can turn a non-shooter into a passable shooter. It happened with Siakam. It happened with Anunoby. Maybe it happens with this guy. Maybe it happens with Scottie Barnes.
Shopping for Mother's Day is usually a challenge because you wait until the last minute. Shame on you, by the way. But Macy's Gift Finder makes it incredibly fast and easy to find the right gift just in time for Mother's Day. Whether you're shopping for your sister's first Mother's Day or your fashionista mom who loves to make a statement, Macy's Gift Finder has so many great gift ideas, you can easily pick out something special to celebrate them both. You can shop by price anywhere from $25 and under to $100 and under. You can also sort by category like fragrance, handbags, more, or gift lists like for the mom who has everything, pre-wrapped gifts, gifts for grandma. You can find top brands like Studio Pro Model Beats headphones, Polaroid cameras, and Samsung smart TVs. So what are you waiting for? Mother's Day is May 12th. That's very soon. It'll be here before you know it. Macy's has the perfect gift guide to make picking something for your mom easy this year. Head to Macy's.com/giftfinder today. That's Macy's.com/giftfinder. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because of the eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Let's go to the Magic, who have two of the top eight picks in the draft, Franz Wagner and Jalen Suggs. We will start with Franz Wagner, who would be first-team all-rookie if the season ended today. 14 points a game on 47% shooting, 39% from threes, top five or six in every advanced stat. And you mentioned a basketball player. Like, he's not going to be the primary ball handler for this team, but he can be on a possession here or there. He's a really good secondary ball handler, catching it off screens in the corner. He has a really nice knack for kind of just driving toward the rim and hitting hook shot, like getting into a guy's body and hitting hook shots and floaters over them. Moves his feet really well on defense. I'm very interested to see the Chuma Okeke, Franz Wagner 3-4 combination for the Magic. I don't know how Jonathan Isaac fits into that and their 9,000 centers. By the way, it's a miracle that Banton did not end up on the Magic, given their proclivity for long guys who can't shoot. I don't know how he slipped through the Magic's grasp. Franz Wagner, he's a smart cutter. Like, the guy's just, he's a good basketball player right now. He has been easily their best rookie. We'll talk about Suggs in a second. I don't know if he'll ever be like a 20-point scorer in the NBA or what, but it's too early to really put ceilings on any of these guys. But he's good now, and nothing about it seems fluky to me. If the jumper is real, nothing about this seems unsustainable.
No, I think it's all sustainable, and a lot of it is a product of his experience at such a young age. It's funny, we had him pretty high all year, I think in the top 10 most of the year, and he was the one guy who people would say, I'm not so much teams, but, outside voices, whatever. I don't really see it with Franz. Why do you guys like Franz so much? Why is Franz so high on your board? What does he do really well? And what he did really well is he was one of the best players on one of the best teams in the country at 19 years old, you know? And so he can come in right away and he knows how to play. He knows how to defend. He knows how to play off the ball. He's very efficient. He can score 20 points using like 9 dribbles, you know? And every coach wants that, right? And then his size, I mean, the funny thing with him is when I first saw him, he was 6'4". And he was like 14, gangly. You knew he had an older brother. And then every year you just waited for him to grow and grow and grow and grow. Cause he had these high hips and he was kind of awkward, had a little like hitch in his giddy up. And now, I mean, he's like pushing 6'10", you know? So I think now he's just starting to grow into his body and become this guy who's super versatile and can play anywhere on the floor. But I think it's his experience, man. Like, he was playing Euro Cup minutes, German BBL minutes when he was 16, 17 years old with Alba Berlin. You know, when I first saw him at that tournament when he was 14, that was an under 18 tournament. So he's been coached by really good coaches, obviously playing for Juwan Howard, and then can come in right away, defend, make shots, and make the right play. So yeah, I think, I don't know, like the ceiling, you know what I mean? Is he ever going to be, you know, your number two or three scoring option? Maybe not. But he defends, he moves the ball, he can shoot, and he's got a little bit of fire to him.
Not a little bit. He is a sneering, wants to eat. When he dunked on Minnesota in that game, I almost fell out of my chair. He likes to go at guys.
Yes, like his brother. I mean, but he has, no offense to Mo, but a little bit more game to back it up, right? And so he's got that type of mentality. I think he's a killer. And let's be honest, like, he's been the better of the two picks, you know, by far up until this point.
Oh, it's not close. We're going to talk about Suggs in a second because I'm very curious about what exactly he is. But I will say, I feel bad for Mo Wagner, and I feel bad in the same way but less so for Lonzo Ball, because we in the media can't help but compare siblings. Like, even when I'm talking to, like, front office guys and coaches about LaMelo, I'll be like, man, he's so much better than Lonzo. They'll say that. And I'm like, well, who cares if he's better than Lonzo? Like, why do we have to compare him to Lonzo? Why can't we compare him to, like, other people other than Lonzo? Poor Mo Wagner. For the third string center on the Magic, Robin Lopez is just going to Disney World. I don't really know what Robin Lopez is doing other than working out those guys in practice, filming skits with Stuff the Magic Dragon about how they have buried their beef and are now friends. I can't, by the way, he's going to turn on Stuff the Magic. It's happening. Like, that's scripted into their relationship. He's going to turn on him violently. That's how it's, I don't know what else he's doing. But yeah, I love, Franz is just going to be a good player. Like you said, is he going to be the number two guy on a great team? I don't think he'll ever be the number one guy. He's number two. That's probably optimistic, I guess, but he's going to help good teams his entire career. That's just the kind of player he is.
And that's what they needed, right? Like they needed somebody to come in and help, you know, create more winning plays and winning culture and winning habits and all that. And that's exactly what he does and has always done. And he's still young. I mean, he's the age of some like freshmen, you know? So I think he has an incredibly bright future.
So this is where I need you, Mike. I need your expertise a lot right now.
Okay.
Because I need you to tell me what Jalen Suggs is, because he leads the Magic in usage rate, which means he shoots a lot and he misses a lot right now. He's shooting 31%, 22% on threes, 13 of 59, like a lot of threes. 5 of 27 on pull-up threes. Does not look like a comfortable shot for him. He's last or next to last among rotation rookies in almost every advanced stat that there is. And yet I look at him and I'm like, yeah, he missed. And he just missed again. It's another miss. Like I get it. He has a certain physicality to him and speed that I like. I get what they're going for. Like, is he a point guard? Is he a two guard? No, he's just a guard. Just a good guard. Just kind of a do-it-all guard. Obviously, his sort of leadership and intangibles were a well-known part of the Jalen Suggs package. But I guess what I'm asking you is, what is this guy going to do at an A-minus to A level in the NBA? Anything? Or is he just going to be like jack of all trades, okay at some stuff, assuming he shoots better at some point?
Yeah, so, there were a lot of people. It's funny, like a lot of kind of people in the college basketball world who, because he was unbelievable, right? Like for Gonzaga, he made game-winning shots, he had triple doubles, he was a complete stud. And there were people who would ask, why do you have Cade number one and not Jalen Suggs? Like that was a real, not so much amongst front offices, but that was a thought at one point. And I was a little bit hesitant with that because when we saw Jalen at Team USA and in different events, he was more like a utility guard. Like I think he started the year in maybe the teens or 20s for us. You know, he was like a souped up Josh Hart almost, like really tough, defends, flies around, cutter, you know, did all the little things playing off of other stars. So then when he did what he did at Gonzaga, it took me a while to recalibrate and be like, whoa, like, okay, I guess this can happen when you put the ball in his hands. So I comped him to more of like at his best, if it were to hit, like a Drew Holiday, okay, where he's going to defend. By the way,
fantastic outcome at the number four pick. If that's what it is, fantastic. That's a great comp. Obviously, what Drew Holiday does on an A level is defense, right? Offense is sort of a B across the board for him, but defense is an A+.
And that's where I see Suggs. Now, okay, he's struggling a little bit out of the gates, but defensively, like I think he has a chance to be pretty special just because he's strong, he's quick, and he cares, and he has great instincts off the ball. He's a little bit reckless at times. You know, he's got that, he's a football player. Like, and I think
it's so funny you say that because I was watching one of their games over the weekend, because this is what I do on my weekends. I watch the Orlando Magic play basketball. And he had a drive. He had a few drives. His body type is like a compact running back body type. Like his wingspan is not very big. I think it's 6'6 wingspan. But he had a couple of drives where he collided midair with Doug McDermott. And Doug McDermott fell backwards. Jalen Suggs made the shot and talked to him. You could see he was like, oh, you're going to challenge me in midair? He reminds me of a football player.
And he was an unbelievable quarterback. I mean, like an NFL type of player. And so you see some of those instincts in like his, when it's scramble situations, like in full court, I mean, he threads the needle. He had some major plays like that in college. And then off the ball defensively, you'll see some of those kind of instinctual plays that, you know, you get when you play football. But I say Drew Holiday because, okay, defensively, you can't punish him in the post. He's strong. He's hard to move. He'll blow up handoffs. He'll fight over screens. He'll do those little things and gain more experience doing that in the future. And then offensively, I'm not sure, and we're learning this now, but I'm not sure he's ever going to be a guy where it's like, okay, you're our full-time on-ball guy. Like he just doesn't have that type of really handle or pace, in my opinion. Like right now, you can see very clearly it's all one speed. It's either like, go, 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 I'm going to run through you, or slow, slow, slow. And he's finding how to adjust to NBA length and athleticism. So like we've seen with Holiday playing alongside Middleton and Giannis, where offensively, yeah, he can bring the ball up and do some things, but he's probably going to be at his best as a catch and shoot guy and then playing second side pick and roll or whatever it is. But what Drew's gotten really good at is being able to play in slow motion in the paint and those big step finishes. And he has that kind of calm demeanor about him on top of being this like unbelievable defender. And so I think that's what Suggs needs to develop, because right now he's just a little bit erratic.
They got something interesting going on down there. I don't know what it is or what it will be, but I know I'm interested to watch a lot of their players. And Isaac hasn't even come back yet. Fultz, I'm a little bit less interested in, but I'm still interested. There's four other guys I want to talk about, so let's go rapid fire. Chris Duarte, second among rookies in scoring, 16 a game on 45% shooting, 42% from three, 13 of 31 on pull-up threes, which is as many as like Jason Tatum and Tyler Hero have. He's just jacking off the dribble. Just solid secondary ball handler, does a lot of things well with the ball, has a good sort of change of pace feel, moves his feet pretty well on defense, hasn't gotten to the line much, 15 free throws so far is not a lot. Everyone sort of pegged him as he's 24, he's ready, expect him to contribute right away. He has on both ends of the floor, cuts well, got a backdoor cut. He cuts also well when he's not involved in the pick and roll, but he's on the perimeter and his guy sinks in a little bit to help. He times those cuts to the basket really well. Is there anything about this that has surprised you, or is this like we knew what this guy was, this is what he is? He's been elevated to a starting role because of all Indiana's injuries, and he's frankly been maybe their most consistent player. I don't know, like really consistent.
Yeah, he's a stud, and it hasn't been a huge surprise to me. I think we all saw him as one of the most ready-made guys. You knew what he did. He can really, really shoot the ball. You knew he can handle the ball. He's an underrated passer. You mentioned the cutting has been really impressive. Like that's a guy who's been coached and who has played at a high level in the Pac-12 under Dana Altman. Like you can see those tendencies. He's like a Dominican Devin Booker at times, like just with the way he gets to his spots, the balance on those pull-ups, like he's really, really smooth. So I thought he would have kind of like a Desmond Bane type of impact, different body type, not the exact type of game, probably has a little more with the ball, but just as a veteran guy who's played at a high level, who can come in, make shots, play a little bit of second side pick and roll and defend, and he's done all those things.
Yeah, he's exactly as advertised, even better to me in terms of his sort of like he bobs and weaves around screens, keeps defenders off balance. They have him catch off a screen and then go into a pick and roll. He's very good at that, as advertised. Let's go. We should probably do the number two pick in the draft, Jalen Green, 13.5 points a game, 3 assists, 3 rebounds, 35% shooting, 29% on threes, 20 of 70 from three. As many assists, 30 assists, 29 turnovers. He's again in this low efficiency, high raw numbers bucket. But as you said earlier, woo, the explosiveness is as advertised. I mean, he, in a couple of recent games, he blew away Anthony Davis on a switch. Like, goodbye, you got no shot, layup. And he was bringing the ball up in semi-transition on the left wing in another game, on the left sideline, and then went diagonally to his right and accelerated as he made that direction change. And it was like, oh my God, he just dusted everyone and hammered in this dunk. It's like, talk about downhill. Like, that's a cliche, like guys get downhill. This guy gets downhill. He's tall. He can handle the ball. He's got some good passing feel. I'm just chalking up the inefficiency to he gets to shoot a lot on a bad team. I think this is about what expectations should have been for the first month of his rookie season. Has anything struck you as surprising in either direction?
No, I think the same. I mean, some of the passing flashes have been kind of a pleasant surprise, to be honest. And I think, you know, continuing to show that maybe he can moonlight, you know, as a lead guard at times is going to help him, because really, he's almost best like guarding point guards, just because he has that wiry frame, you know.
He gets skinny. That's in my notes. He can get around screens on the ball. When he knows they're coming, he gets skinny. He gets around them and he keeps fighting. Like, he has an appetite for that kind of defense, which for a young scorer is encouraging. And he's long enough where he can you up from behind trying to pass the ball and stuff.
Yeah, he can you up in those situations. And listen, off the ball, he's a mess defensively. If you put him in the post, he's really going to struggle. You know, all those things. I mean, I went to the Ignite practices early in the year, and they had a play called Baby, and they would just call out Baby, and it was basically just to get Jalen ISO'd in the mid post, and they would just go at him, and he hated it. If you listen to this, he's going to hate that I'm even telling that story. But he has a little bit of toughness and realness to him that I really like. Like anytime I would sit down and talk basketball with him, he's not a great interview. He kind of mumbles. He doesn't really speak up. And every time I would leave and just think, like, that's a real dude, you know? And so I have a lot of respect, not only for his game, but, you know, the way he approaches things. I mean, if you watch that guy in a one-on-one workout, like, you can talk yourself into the fact that he's going to be, you know, one of the best players in this draft. So I've always said he's going to lead the league in scoring one day. I really believe that. And he's not the same player as Anthony Edwards, but it is some of those similar, like some of the similarities in terms of strengths and weaknesses. Like he's not always going to be efficient. He's going to get lost off the ball at times. He's going to make some boneheaded plays, but when he gets going, oh my God.
I think he'll be an okay three-point shooter at worst. Like, I know 29% sounds ugly, but when you watch the shots he's taking, I mean, he's taking really long pull-up threes, difficult challenged pull-up threes, like shots that you could argue maybe he shouldn't even be taking now, but they look smooth. His form looks good. He has good arc, and he's so tall, he can get them off. And you mentioned the passing. Like, he has threaded a lot of pocket passes to his big men that have been really, really slick and well-timed and impressive. If anything, I think he's kind of addicted to making pocket passes. Like, he doesn't hit the weak side shooters as much, but mm-hmm. given his height and he clearly reads the floor, like, that stuff will come. I've been impressed with his passing, and his explosiveness is – his handle can get a little – like, his height, he can dribble a little too upright. Like, he loves – snaking the pick and roll, which means you go around the screen and then you crisscross the other way. And he doesn't quite realize that A, he's too uptight or too upright rather, and B, his guy's still right behind him and will poke the ball away. Like Avery Bradley picked him a couple times. So like, but that will come. He's been about what I've wanted. He even got an offensive foul where he did the Chris Paul thing around mm-hmm. a pick and roll where he stopped with a guy, trapped a guy on his hip, and then kind of shoulder checked him a little bit to open up space, and he got whistled for it. I was like, I love that offensive foul. I love it. I love that he's in position to commit that offensive foul because it's a smart, slow the game down, wait for the defense to reveal some hole somewhere. And yeah, he shoulder checked the dude. I love it. Loved every second of it. Let's move on. That's Jalen Green. Two other guys, rapid fire. I mentioned Josh Giddey before. 10 points, 6 assists, 6 rebounds on 40% shooting, 7 of 27 on threes. Not great. But solid advanced stats for a rookie playing on a team with very little shooting around him. Obviously, the passing vision is the highlight here. Just the one-handed with either hand slingshots to the opposite corner on target, on time. The guy sees the floor at an A level for a rookie and really maybe even A level for a veteran. They use him as a screener some for Shea, who, by the way, oh my God, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. He's had a couple off games by his standards recently, but he looks like he is leaning all the way into being a superstar offensive player. And again, you don't use Josh Giddey as a screener who kind of flares out for threes unless you have a faith in his ability to read the game. Nice floater. Keeps guys. He does the thing where, again, he gets guys on his back, and he knows my floater's a threat, and if I fake it, I might have that drop off to the big guy over here. He's manipulating defenses already. What has surprised you, and what is he going to be in like 3-4 years? Like, what was the optimistic Josh Giddey vision?
Well, first of all, he's huge. You know, I think that's part of something that you almost underrate until you see him next to other NBA guys. Like, he almost looks like he's playing in slow motion, but he can get everywhere he wants because he's so smart and he's so big. Now, I want to see what happens when, okay, yeah, it's early season, when people are going under everything, like, can he make enough, right? Because then
it's already starting.
It's already starting. And then those things that you talked about where he's keeping you on his back and he's slowing down, you don't have that opportunity unless it's another rescreen and you can really get to that spot. But that, at that point, you're eating a lot of clock, right? So I think the shooting is going to be something that he needs to continue to improve. That was always kind of the question. But, you know, is he like a big secondary, you know, like he's a point guard in some sense, right? But he's not someone that you want to hand the ball to and just say, hey, go get us a bucket, because that's not really his game. That's why he plays really well with Shea. So I think he has a chance to be one of the best passers in the NBA, just with his height and the way that he sees the floor. So is he a, you know, high level starter? That's kind of how I see him. Is he going to be an all-star, triple double type of guy? I think that's going to depend on if he addresses the shooting piece, but the passing is really fun. The way he processes the game, like and it's like the accuracy of it. That's so ridiculous.
Oh, right, you know? Here, right on my hands.
Every Boom. Time. So yeah, he's got, you know, he has a little bit of arrogance to him that I think is going to bode well for him. You know, I talked to Joe Ingles a bunch about him. He's kind of helped him throughout the process. And, you know, that was a natural comparison in some ways, because Joe was not really this big time shooter at that age. He was not a great shooter at Josh's age, and then evolved into one. But Joe would even tell you Josh is far ahead of him at the same age.
Well, and if there's anyone who's going to teach you a little bit of trash talking arrogance, it's Joe Ingles, who is laughing at people all the time on the floor. I like that Josh Giddey is daring with his passes. He'll dare some interior passes that other guys would just sort of default to kickouts. Was like, you know what? We're at the rim. Let me try and get something at the rim. I'm a fan. Last guy, Davion Mitchell, 10 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 39% shooting, 28% on threes, 12 of 43. So he's getting them up. Defensively, I mean, it just makes me uncomfortable watching him defend guys on the ball. He almost, even just last night against Indiana, he almost forced 2 8-second violations. He almost picked guys multiple times, like 40 feet from the rim. He forced 2 turnovers where his guy was basically just like, I give up. I'm going to heave this ball across the court, and somebody else stole it. Pretty impressive for a guy who only has a 6'4 wingspan. And you feel that when he's closing out on shooters. Like, they're not deterred by him when he's closing out. Offensively, obviously, the shooting is the question. He doesn't get to the rim much. He's only attempted 11 free throws. But he's been a useful player for them already. He's played a lot of crunch time, and he's sort of the bridge that minimizes how often they have to play the Fox-heeled Halliburton 3-guard lineup, which is going to bleed points on defense. What's up with Davion Mitchell? What do we think so far?
The defense is completely as advertised. I mean, he's a film junkie. You know, I was able to do some film session stuff with him. And I mean, he's you thought you were talking to like an NBA head coach. The way that he understands tendencies, the way that he understands getting under screens, getting over screens, you know, standing up bigs on switches. Like, he's short, but you cannot move this guy. I mean, he is like a cinder block. And he has that type of strength and balance. So I think we're seeing that on the defensive end of the floor. I think he's going to be, you know, one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA for a long, long time.
And the whole energy of the game changes when he comes in the game. The entire energy of it's just one of those guys. You can see it. The entire Kings team is like, oh, look at what this guy's doing. I got to step my game up too. You can feel it.
And he's earned the respect of everyone else in the NBA already because of that, because of the way that he defends. I always said he was the best on-ball defender I've ever evaluated in terms of technique, in terms of effort. So I think that's a no-brainer. Now, you mentioned it's going to be the shooting piece, and it took him time to get comfortable, you know, from the college line. And I think it's just the same thing right now from the NBA line. But he has had some games where it's like, okay, 4 for 5 from three. Step back.
He's not afraid.
No, he's not afraid. I think he's going to be fine as a shooter. You know, I was a big, hey, he's going to be fine just because he shot 65% from the free throw line, you know, in college doesn't mean he can't shoot. He made huge shots all NCAA tournament his entire career. So I think he's going to be fine there. He's even added things he really didn't have in college. Like, I think he took like 5 floaters or something his last year. And now we're seeing a little bit of the, hey, put you in jail and then I have the float game. Now it's, okay, can I get
tons,
to the free throw line? A lot
tons.
Of them, right?
He's shooting 45% on floaters. And if anything, you see this with a lot of these young guards, rookie guards. You mentioned before Suggs dealing with the length and speed of NBA defenses. One way the shock of that can manifest with these guys is they turn the corner and they have a runway towards the help defender, and they pull up like way too early. Like, Mitchell has launched some floaters literally from the elbow, like exactly on the elbow, where it's almost half jump shot, half floater. It's like, oh man, that's too long. And if you had one more dribble, The roll man might be there. The corner shooter might be there. And by the way, he sees those passes. And he can also, he's a creative finisher. Like he had, I don't know who they were playing. He had a finish in one recent game where he turned the corner. No, someone went under a pick against him. And he beat him to the other side of the pick, was going left, gathered the ball one-handed lefty so that the defense couldn't reach him, and flicked in this layup off the glass with nice soft touches. Like, damn, that's not easy.
Yeah, he's obsessive about his work. Like he used to, I don't remember if it was during his redshirt year or his last year at Baylor, but they had this like 4 a.m. club where he would literally go at 4 a.m. He watched every single ball screen he'd ever been in his career in games and practice at Baylor. Every single ball, like he's a complete junkie. So I always thought, okay, we talked about, you know, you'll see like a little bit of Donovan Mitchell when he was in college at that level, right? Or we talked about, you know, some of the defensive stuff being like, is it Jrue Holiday-like? Or I think Kyle Lowry is a good like outcome for his career. You know, a guy who makes a ton of winning plays, who's incredibly smart, who improves as a perimeter shooter, and guys just hate playing against.
You got to go to LAX, so go to LAX. Apologies to Alperen Şengün. We will get to you. I've enjoyed your play so far. There are just too many rookies. There are too many. Mike Schmitz, maybe I'll see you this week. Maybe not, but it's good to see you on the podcast. Your work is second to none. Thank you for giving us some time.
Thanks, Zach. Appreciate it. Shout out to Alperen Şengün.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.